Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Damage Report with Francesca Fiorentini. That's right. I'm still here. John Iderola, Johnny Sliderola to some of us, is out still, but he will be back tomorrow. Don't worry, with a very special guest. Nina Turner, none other, is going to be joining him tomorrow. But today, it's a Monday. It's fantastic Monday. I am here. So cool. Aren't you excited about that? I hope you're hitting all the like buttons. And I'm really excited to be joined for the hour by the Director of Strategy and Partnerships at Working Families Party. Nalini Stamp is here. Nalini, welcome.
Hey, everybody. I'm so excited to be here. This is great.
I'm so excited to have you. Nalini, it's your first time on, but you're an organizer. You've been in the trenches. You've been on campaigns. You were in Occupy 10 years ago as we celebrate the 10th anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. And now here you are on the Damage Report.
Love it. This is going to be fun. I'm really excited about this.
It's going to be so good. We got a lot of stories, okay? We've got some a lady I'm naming Cornhole Karen. So that's going to be a fun one. Vaccines for kids look like they're coming. Some really, really terrible images on the border, of course, and what's going on with the Haitian migrants who are seeking refuge in this country. And also some splitskies in the Republican Party. Also some splitskies in the Democratic Party. It's gonna be a fun one. It'll be wonky. It'll be weird. I hope you're liking that like button right now. Click that button. Subscribe. Share this stream. Chime in on the chat. I'll be reading chats on Twitch and YouTube throughout this hour and change. So tuck in. Welcome to all y'all. And before we get into it, I must mention that right after this show is Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. It's not on the Damage Report anymore. You gotta go to youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. I just forgot it, but I remembered it. It's right there on the screen. IndisputableTYT coming up right after this show. It's gonna be super good. His co-host, the doc's co-host is Waz Nilambre, of course. Big fave, big Waz. But with that said, Alini, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready to roll. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's do it.
I look at it, the more I see it, it's the mark of the beast. I mean, as simple as that. It's like in Australia, they're like rounding up people and sending them to camps for refusing the shot. I mean, right now, probably 30 to 50% of the American population has already had COVID. COVID runs, see, viruses run their course every year. Every year we have colds, we have flus. And then by the end of the, by the spring, the viruses have run their course, we have herd immunity, and people get on with their lives. I mean, this has been happening as long as people have been. I mean, there's been flus, and every year, you know, the flu kills so many elderly people and even a handful of young people. And I mean, there's nothing abnormal about that, except that Fauci did actually commission this from a Chinese bioweapons laboratory. So yeah, this was created where they had a Chinese bioweapons laboratory mix some kind of bat and pangolin virus and then weaponize it to where it could be infecting humans, because originally those viruses can't transmit to humans.
Oh, that interview really should have ended earlier than that, but I'm glad it didn't, because it went off the rails there at the end. That was just a little sampling of the flora and fauna that were out this Saturday for the Support the J6 or Justice for J6 rally by Trump supporters, pro-Trump folks, in which, let's be real, there were more media members and police officers than there were members of that march. That was from Jordan Yule for TYT. Just, you know, getting a little audio and hearing about some of these ralliers. All the folks that did attend were clearly the people that were not on the Telegram chat telling them not to attend, because They haven't figured out Telegram yet. The theme of the protests was for those arrested, to support those arrested for nonviolent offenses. Nonviolent offenses? Okay. Surrounding January 6th, they argued, and have been jailed for too long or have suffered other mistreatments that defy their constitutional rights. Remember when that dude got special vegetarian vegan meals? Remember the QAnon shaman? I do. But anyway, of course, they said they were going to come out to support, show solidarity on this day. And US Capitol Police once again had to be prepared, fearing another violent riot like that of January 6th. US Capitol Police joined forces with other local and federal enforcement agencies, creating a massive security apparatus that featured road closures, layers of fencing, hundreds of officers, a National Guard Corps on standby, and a cavalry lying in wait, and helicopters buzzing overhead. It's not clear how many protests were actually there. The group that organized it, Look Ahead America, declined to offer a guess, which Nalini can weigh in. Never a good answer when the organizers decline to say how many. Anyway, yet protesters seem to be outnumbered by the hundreds of members of the media, the police, and the counter protesters who had gathered to heckle the pro-Trump demonstrators from the sidelines. It appears that it was something around 400, but of course there were more members of the media and more police officers in one of those sort of everyone's taking a picture of the same weirdo kind of moments. Nalini, your response to this and also just the circus of having so many eyeballs on this day.
Well, there was so much good content that happened in there. I mean, here's the thing, right? You have all these folks who are like, justice for us, we're so woe is me. When you actually have political prisoners still to this day from movements of like the American Indian movement, from the Black Panthers, from folks who did free breakfast programs. So, You're gonna miss me with the, oh my God, I tried to overthrow the entire government of the United States. And and we are the ones that are totally, we're oppressed. You're gonna very, very, very much miss me with that. What's interesting that there was so much media there, I think that people are waiting for something else to happen, right? Mm-hmm. People are hedging their bets that whether it's the Proud Boys, whether it's, you know, the folks who led the Capitol insurrection, whether it's the MAGA crowd, that they're going to do something again. And I think, you know, what we've seen is a lot of, which we'll get to later, school board upheaval, right, that has gotten into massive arrests. But I think that that's what tells you is that the police and the media are now more prepared because they're out there more than they were on the 6th of January. And I just think that the level of disinformation that is out there, like bats, like creating a creating a disease or a virus in a lab in China with bats that are never meant to get to humans. It's just like, what?
Well, the bats were wearing, Fauci, he outfitted a little coat, a little lab coat for right. The Batman. It was actually his little Robin to his Batman.
Okay.
And you know, they tag team and they ride around in the same car. And like, you know, it's a whole right. thing. It's a conspiracy. Speaking of Batman though, Batman showed up. Yo, listen, Oath Keepers and Proud Boys might have stayed away, but Batman kept it real. Here he is. The Batman. On outside of the Capitol. Do we have that photo? I'll wait. We may not have the photo. Oh, here we go. There he is. This is, I just took some ivermectin.
He's also really outfitted. Like he has all the, like, I want to know what gadget, like, does he actually have like those like bat spades? Like,
yeah.
The bat daggers. Like I am confused or intrigued on what he has in those little pouches.
As Triumph the Comic Insult Dog once said, which one of these buttons calls your mom to tell her to pick you up? That's my favorite ever. So yeah, that gives you a sense. And there, of course, there's like five journalists surrounding Batman taking their photo. I happen to know that there were people that day trying to hold a press conference for getting police officers out of public schools in this country. And he was trying to bring some of these journalists who were all focused on the support, the J6, mm-hmm. you know, like nonviolent protesters. He was trying to get the journalists over to cover their like very important press conference and to no avail. And that just gives you a sense of like, it's a little bit of like, you know, the tail that wags the dog in this, like everyone's kind of waiting for something to pop off. And for sure, you're right. We should be afraid. We should know that, like, especially when it's led by folks like Donald Trump, that, you know, riots can and will happen. The difference is that actually Donald Trump did distance himself from this day, even though they did not distance themselves from him. He did not encourage people to go out. In fact, let's go to this. Influential figures on the right discouraged their followers from showing up Saturday, asserting the event was a trap. Baseless rumors ricocheted through social media, alleging that the federal government was attempting to lure demonstrators to Washington to arrest them. The Proud Boys, a group of history with history of violence that includes participation in the January 6th insurrection, discouraged their members from attending. I love that, like, now they're saying, oh, the federal government is luring us. Yeah, honey, the federal government lured you on January 6th too. We all saw it. They were there speaking. This demonstration was different, though. Again, not a lot of high profile Congress people. Marjorie Taylor Greene, not even out there. Matt Gaetz, you know, got his own sort of problems. But it was led by this group, Look Ahead America, headed by a man. I'm gonna find his name that I don't really care who he is, but Matt Brainerd. And this is what Matt Brainerd had to say. He did speak in front of the media. Let's go to that.
Is that there are uniformed officers here who I demand that you respect, you're kind to, you're respectful to, and you're obedient to. They're here to keep us safe. We're counting on them to do that, and we know that they will. There's also many members of the media here. And I make the same request. I make the same request of them. You see somebody, the member of the media, be kind and respectful. They may ask you if you'd like to be interviewed. Now, if you're not used to this, I would recommend that you don't, because we've gotten a lot of misrepresentation.
Okay, here's one man standing in the wind saying, please be respectful to law enforcement and the media at a rally that is celebrating the insurrection and trying to call the people who were arrested for those crimes. Basically, yeah, nonviolent political prisoners. In fact, let's go to some of what was said from those rally goers. How did they see January 6th? That's Matt Brainerd, who said that it was nonviolent, right? What do they say? What is it? Was it Antifa?
Is January 6th the hoax?
The so-called right-wing violence is.
Right-wing violence. How is it a hoax?
Most of it is lies. One man died of medical conditions. Days later, they came out with a story that he had been bashed over the head with a fire extinguisher. Coroner said no, family said no. There wasn't a blunt injury on him.
I believe the government. I believe the government perpetrated the attack on the Capitol. Certainly, the MAGA people showed up here and walked up there. The people wanted to support Trump because they know he won the election. They know the election was fraud. And I think that the majority of people breaking our beautiful Capitol and busting things, I think they were government people. They were somehow affiliated with Nancy Pelosi and her wicked cabal.
Is that something you kind of you just believe, or did you read that somewhere?
I believe it. I saw the people throwing stuff. Yeah. They were all big old boys. They didn't look like they're big healthy guys like you, man.
People feel like there was like an element of deep state presence within the January 6th protests. Is that something that you feel?
I feel there were a few plants. Yes, yeah. I do feel like Bill Barr was a plant. I feel like Mitch McConnell is a plant for the Democrats.
Okay, she's laughing through her own conspiracy theory. Nalini, some responses to that, all that logic happening real fast.
Wow. Well, you know, I mean, on January 6th, the ruling government was the Trump government and Republicans, many of who said it's 1776. So you know what? In some way, they are right with their words. But I mean, this is, Yeah, I mean, Mitch McConnell, a plant for the deep state, although he literally every step of the way tries to stop any progress from happening. It's just absolutely wild to me. But also, I need to talk about that outfit. That first outfit, like, I feel like some of these folks are like trying to go for like a Coachella, like rural aesthetic. Like, they're trying to go. It's just like very festival type outfit.
Yes.
But with a David Crockett, like a Davy Crockett little twist to it. And so I'm very unsure as to what the fashion behind these insurrectionists are. But I, you know, I mean, this is what you're going to hear. You're going to hear folks who just, no matter what the actual truth is, they are going to believe in what they believe in, which is that the election was stolen. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point, just like they believe the virus was made up, they believe that the virus doesn't actually kill people, even though 600,000 Americans are dead. Like, this is unfortunately where we are at. But I'm curious to see what that's going to turn into next year in midterms and in the following years.
100%. I mean, you got to think about the fact that Trump isn't campaigning right now and or yet. Mm-hmm. Right. And what happens when, what happens when there's leadership? I mean, this is the other thing is like, right. I think there's a lot of question as to whether deplatforming works, you know, whether shaming works. And like, and if it's to prevent another sort of either Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville that claimed the life of Heather Heyer, or this, you know, or the January 6th insurrection that did claim the life of a Capitol Police officer, Brian Sicknick, that like, it's okay. That like, even if it's like a dinky, hilarious, stupid, you know, sort of turnout, it's like, it shows that actually the amount of, that there was some amount of accountability, even though the representatives and the officials and the former president who egged it all on are, some of them are still in office, right? You know, you got Representative Mo Brooks still in office. You've got like, no one's been held accountable actually for leading that. In fact, what they should be mad at, if they're gonna do this rally, is they should be mad at the fact that like these leaders who egged them on then like let them out to dry, right? That they're not actually facing charges for similar crimes of aiding and abetting this insurrection, which, by the way, constitutionally not allowed. Illegal, in fact, after the Civil War. Remember that? It's ridiculous and it's funny on a certain level, but it's like all it takes is for another election cycle to come up, or, you know, Josh Hawley to decide it's his turn to lead whatever else it is, or for a new, you know, Oath Keeper type Proud Boy amalgamation to resurge once they get out from underneath all of their lawsuits and you get another Charlottesville. So we will see. I am caught between both laughing at it and also being deathly afraid of it. But at least there were a few more cops. So, hey, there's that.
And I think the other thing too, unfortunately, like, people like, I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but the Liz Cheneys of the world are getting censured by the party, but Lauren Boebert and her shooters and all the guns are like, are still around. So it's there. The leaders that led them to do this have not faced any consequences, even though other leaders in their party have, which is beyond bizarre.
Absolutely. All right, we got to take our first break. We will be right back. All right, welcome back to the Damage Report. Here with you, Francesca Fiorentini and Nalini Stamp. Let's get into this next story. So there's trouble on Lover's Island. There's a quarrel on Republican Lover's Island. I don't know how to say this. You know, sometimes when you want to like chase out a roach, maybe you got to send in like a rat to get the roach. The point is this. Trump is going after Mitch McConnell. That's right. Senate minority majority. We're not really sure. It's a power sharing agreement. Leader Mitch McConnell is squarely in the crosshairs of Donald J. Trump, who's mad, big mad at him. Not really sure why, but Trump seems to think that getting rid of Mitch McConnell will help him in the future. Does it have something to do with the fact that Mitch McConnell denounced what did happen on January 6th and did call the folks who stormed the Capitol insurrectionists and a mob? Perhaps. So let's go to this. Mr. Trump spoke recently with senators and allies about trying to depose Mr. McConnell and whether any Republicans are interested in mounting a challenge, according to people familiar with the conversations. There's little appetite among Senate Republicans for such a plan. Lawmakers and aides agree. So a couple quotes from them. I'm not gonna get into that fight, says Senator Tommy Tuberville, one of Mr. Trump's top aides in the Senate. Mr. McConnell, he added, is, quote, doing a good job. Yeah, that's right. He's doing the obstructionist job that we want. Senator John Kennedy says, quote, I just don't realistically see that happening. All right, mind you that Mitch McConnell is up at the end of his term, doesn't end until January 2023. So 2024 is when he would be up. This would be his 8th term, the longest ever tenure for a Republican leader. And the reason that when my mom is like, I hate Donald Trump. No, I hate Mitch McConnell more. No, I hate Donald Trump. She's like very, man, my mom hates Mitch McConnell. But it's adorable though, because she, you know, she's, you know, 75 and adorable. But there you have it. This is Mitch McConnell's strategy. This is Trump's strategy, and it's probably because he didn't buy into the entire election was stolen nonsense, right? So this is Donald Trump. Okay, this is what Donald Trump says, though. I'm sorry, I'm ping-ponging all over the place. Under a weak leadership of Mitch McConnell, Senate Republicans continue to lose. He lost Arizona, he lost Georgia, he ignored election fraud, and he doesn't fight. So this is Trump basically blaming his loss on McConnell. And he's also mad that McConnell seems to be going along with that infrastructure bill. Mind you, that very pared down, yes, bipartisan infrastructure bill that does have the support of him and other Republicans in the Senate. Trump says nobody will ever understand why Mitch McConnell allowed this non-infrastructure bill to be passed. He's given up all of his leverage for the big whopper of a bill that will follow. I have quietly said for years that Mitch McConnell is the most overrated man in politics. Now I don't have to be quiet anymore. Wow. I've always said he was just a cool 4, 4.5 maybe. If you're drunk, a 5. Like, I love that he's using these overrated, just the same like celebrity jargon to talk about the leader of the Republican Party, Mitch McConnell, who, let's be real, has done very well for Republicans when it comes to keeping minority rule and, you know, stopping any plans for progress. Sure, he might want to build a couple bridges here and there, like physically, but everything else he's been trying to stop. Nalini, what do you think of this newfound strategy from our former president?
Yeah, well, I think our moms should start our Moms Against Mitch club because my mom also is definitely very much against Mitch McConnell. So that'll be a cool little club. But yeah, this is, I mean, listen, Donald Trump likes to attach himself to things and fabricate reality, right? He likes to make things a scandal and a drama. That's what you learn in reality TV. You have to create something out of nothing. But here's the thing, Mitch McConnell is doing the Republicans wonders. Like, they might have lost the presidency, but they gained seats in the House last year, and we cannot forget about that.
Yeah.
They might have lost the presidency, but we've only been able to pass the American Rescue Package. Not all of the things that our communities really need in the face of this crisis. So Mitch McConnell, for him, this is the weirdest thing I'm gonna say probably my entire life. He's doing a good job at his job.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't like it. I am on the opposite side of it, but he is doing a really good job of keeping his part. With despite all of the different things that are happening in his conference, you have Marjorie Taylor Greene and you have Cheney in one party, and he is keeping it as a one track thing. They are still on the same page. They're still on the same wavelength, and they're winning in terms of their issues and what they've been able to do, which is obstruct things. And I do actually feel that Donald Trump and his tiny hands are just trying to just clamor to end everything because people are not meeting with him anymore. They're not going to Mar-a-Lago kissing he wants everybody to kiss the ring and his gold bath. And they're not doing that anymore. So he needs to be a pufferfish in this moment and puff up and be like, oh, I'm the best at everything and nobody's great. So like, that's my weak Donald Trump impersonation. But that's
pretty much on point
going on right now.
No, and I could do a very good Mitch McConnell, and it's disgusting, and everybody hates when I do it. But I'm very successful. How disgusting is his face? This face is disgusting.
If you're listening as a podcast, why? Look at him. It's perfect. You got the frown, but then you got the gullet on the bottom and no lips. He's got no lips.
And I will say that I do hate the poor. I hate poor people more than anything in the world.
Okay. Let's look at that. Who's delivered more for the Republican Party since the Republican Party did lose the White House, right? So the Political Action Committee, run by allies of Mr. McConnell, including the Senate Leadership Fund, American Crossroads, and various state-specific groups, spent $462.5 million in helping elect Republicans in 2020. Meanwhile, in the first 6 months of 2021, Trump stockpiled $102 million in political cash, but reported no donations to Republican campaigns during that time. So Trump's hoarding his money. All of his PACs, I mean, look, from a strategic Republican perspective, right, with no bearing in morality and all bearing in evil, right? Like, it's like the person who's raising more money for you is the guy who's actually making a PAC that where the money goes to other candidates and not just your own candidate. Trump, we know he's pocketed all that cash from all of his super PACs. They're all for a potential run or maybe, I don't know, lawsuits, you know, the subpoenas that he's getting, new lawyers, paying Giuliani's whiskey fund. We're not sure where that money is exactly going, but it's certainly not going to other Republicans. And we've seen him go out, especially in Georgia, right, where I know Working Families Party did a huge amount of work in 2020. On the other side of that, you had Trump going out there trying to get, hold hands with Kelly Loeffler and Perdue and prop those guys up. And he was even resentful for doing that, and they lost, right? So look, I'm not saying MAGA is dead. I'm not saying that political wave is at all going anywhere. You see a lot of folks trying to be America's next top MAGA, as I've said. But for sure, folks see that Trump is less and less relevant to continuing that neo-fascism, that they can still potentially continue it. And especially when he's going after the king, who is Mitch McConnell, and who makes Trump real mad. It makes Trump real, real mad that McConnell is still in the limelight, and he's praised by all of these Republicans. Any last thoughts, Nalini, before we move on?
I mean, there is that saying, which I don't remember it fully. I was gonna try to look it up, but if you go after the king, you best come with the juice. And I do not think Donald Trump is coming with any juice. Some toupees here and there, some lawsuits, maybe he's gonna build a Four Seasons finally here in Philadelphia. But the reality is that you're coming for the king, and he's trying to dethrone somebody that he has no juice to. So
right. I love that you best have the juice. I think it's you best not miss.
Yeah, but, it's you best not miss.
But I like the juice. You best have some good juice. Like, right. Is it? No, Trump's got a dirty diapy juice. We all know that. I'm sorry, guys. I'm gonna say it. We've all seen the bulge. Nalini knows I'm like obsessed with this.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears to something a little less fun than watching Republicans sort of go at one another. For days, 14,000 Haitian migrants have been virtually camping underneath a bridge in Del Rio, Texas, in this makeshift camp, ideally waiting to be let into the United States or make an asylum claim, or of course, be deported. And this weekend, Border Patrol began to do just that, specifically deporting and trying to honestly terrorize that encampment and not allowing migrants to make it into the United States to make their claims. And they did so in pretty disgusting fashion, which led to some really horrendous images, specifically of Border Patrol on horse chasing Haitian migrants around basically this, the border. And I want to just go to some of those images. You saw that encampment. Let's just go to some of these images. Here the Border Patrol are on horseback chasing migrants. I believe there looks like there's like even whips involved.
Yep. Sure.
Now, let's understand what these images are conjuring up, right? Like, it is not, it should not be lost on any American to see men on horseback, mostly white men on horseback, chasing African migrants, Haitian migrants, you know, migrants of African descent from Haiti around in a, I mean, come on, this is it, this is the year 2021, and this, these are the images that we have, right? This is Border Patrol. This is the so-called humanitarian way that we deal with migrants. This is what happens when you just say don't come, and then migrants end up coming, then you get chased around to, you know, to make it look like we're in the middle of you know, a slave patrol here.
They're kids. They're literally kids. They're teenagers. They're kids that are in those photos that are facing incredible amount of circumstances that have happened in Haiti over the last 5 years, but especially over the last year, with assassinations, earthquakes. And this is the way that we say, oh, this is the land of the free. This is the way that we welcome people with whips and horses to children.
Whips. What are, I mean, like, look, we've done our fair coverage of like police brutality and violence, but it's like there is something especially disgusting to go back to a whip instead of like a taser. Like, I'm not arguing in advance for anything, but like, yeah, seeing black migrants be treated like this is just, come on, it is awful, it is inhuman. And so let's go to actually what is happening. There are a number of flights, many flights that are trying to slowly or quickly actually deport these migrants. So US Border Patrol Chief Raul L. Ortiz said the agency is increasing the capacity of Title 42 flights to expel individuals to Haiti and other countries of origin. What is Title 42? So while international law protects the rights to seek asylum, Public Health Ordinance Title 42, adopted by former President Donald Trump during COVID-19 and continued by President Joe Biden, allows for rapid expulsions without the opportunity to seek asylum. Now, Biden did amend Title 42 to not apply to children, I believe very young children. But as we saw in that image, that looks like a kid of like, what, 7 or 8 right there. Mm-hmm. And also, he's continuing with this policy. So we are deporting en masse Haitian migrants who are fleeing a situation that is deathly over there in terms of whether it's political instability, whether it is the earthquake that have left many communities devastated. But it's happening. So more than 320 migrants arrived in Port-au-Prince on 3 flights on Sunday. Haiti said that 6 flights were expected on Tuesday. US authorities were moving to expel many more of the 12,000 migrants, 12 to 14,000 migrants who camped under the bridge in Del Rio after crossing from Ciudad Acuña, Mexico. And Mexico, by the way, totally complying with this, right? So this is part of that deal, is kind of like putting the pressure on Mexico. Hey, can you also put the squeeze from your end? Well, where are migrants supposed to go? Well, what is supposed to happen, right? You know, if you don't like people living under a bridge, why don't you give them temporary housing, right? Why don't you allow them in to stay either in Acuña or to stay in the United States safely? Look, I don't believe detention is good. I don't want especially private detention facilities, but I certainly do not want to see people living under a bridge in the United States when they're coming to seek asylum. So it's just devastating. I want to go to someone to speak in their own words, a migrant to speak in their own words. This is Charles Edirame, who is resting on Sunday in Ciudad Acuña with his wife and daughter. First, they had crossed into the encampment, but when they heard about the deportations, they returned to Mexico. The Haitian family was deciding what to do next. Quote, we don't have any money, we don't have anything. We spent 2 months getting here on foot. In Haiti, we don't have a president. There was just an earthquake. How can I go back to Haiti? If I go back, I could die the next day, is what he says. Nalini, just thoughts on that and on this continued government attitude toward migrants right now at this time.
Yeah, I mean, all of this is especially hurtful when the Senate parliamentarian yesterday ruled that immigration, a pathway to citizenship, couldn't be in the reconciliation package. This came out last night. And so you have people who are fighting for communities. You have organizations like the National Domestic Workers, Mi Gente, and so many who have been fighting for a pathway to citizenship for such a long time, and to deny it every step of the way, and to be like, well, what these people need to go, and we're gonna meet them with whips and on horseback is it's really one of the most vile things that I've seen. In modern times in this country, is just like not giving any option, not giving anything, but just detaining people or violently deporting them or violently treating them is just, it is not what apparently this country was founded on or what we uplift to the rest of the world.
Yes, 100%. Thank you for saying that. We have to take a quick break. I also have a minor battery issue. So if I lose everybody and everything, I apologize. Never buy fake Apple batteries off of eBay. Let that be a lesson to you, but we're going to a break right now. All right, Francesca Fiorentini and Nalini Stamp back with you on the Damage Report. Nalini Stamp, AKA Spicy Dragon. Very, very exciting. Hopefully my computer won't die in the middle of this, you guys. But look, is Mercury in retrograde? I don't know. Maybe. I think we'll be fine though. Let's go into this next story. So it's not the cover of Vanity Fair, but it looks like Beto O'Rourke will be coming for Governor Greg Abbott's seat next year, all right? So three sources are saying that O'Rourke is inching closer to announcing a run for Texas governor. The three people discussed, all the three people, all those sources, they're very anonymous. So they're all buttoned up, but we've got some clues. In recent weeks, Mr. O'Rourke has been making calls to Democratic leaders across Texas to inform them that he is seriously considering taking on Governor Greg Abbott, a Republican who is up for re-election next year. And he's begun talking to supporters about having them join his campaign staff. A decision could be made in the coming weeks, the three people said, possibly as soon as October. Now remember, Beto O'Rourke was running in the Democratic presidential primary. That's where he was sort of out in front, and his doggo was in the background going like, don't run, you're not gonna do well. And he didn't do well. He was one of the first people to drop out, but he ran after losing to Ted Cruz in the Senate race in 2018. And a lot of people thought, look, why would someone who lost an election then run for president? But to be fair, he only lost that Senate race by 220,000 votes, which is not very many considering how many millions came out to vote in that election. And how Ted Cruz is, again, like virtually untouchable. We're talking about a Republican incumbent who has been delivering, and by delivering, I mean skipping town and going to Cancun when his state needs him most, which I guess if you're a Republican in Texas feels like leadership to you. So it's not bizarre for him to do this, but he is hammering this, you know, the dream of a purple Texas. That's Beto O'Rourke doing that. No Democrat has ever been elected governor of Texas since Ann Richards in 1990. And no prominent Democrat has emerged to take on Mr. Abbott next year. So it's either Beto O'Rourke or bust, pretty much, or more Greg Abbott. Nalini, you've done a lot of campaigning. You understand terrain, optics, etc. What do you make of this run at Greg Abbott right now?
Well, it's about time somebody makes a run. I mean, I think that people have been waiting for a long time for leadership to just say, somebody to just say, I'm doing it, I'm running. We need to do this ahead of time when you're trying to take out an incumbent. So if Beto or O'Rourke is really making this decision and really considering it, I'm glad. I wish somebody would have just made the decision right when all of that terrible legislation came out, including the 6-week abortion shrinkage, as well as the snitch law, because I don't really know what else to call it.
Yes.
But I think that, listen, there have been organizers on the ground for a really long time in Texas that have been fighting to change the state. Organizations like Texas Organizing Project, Workers Defense Fund, the Texas Working Families Party, and more, who have been really organizing folks for a long time in the state. And so I really, really, really believe that if folks have a candidate that they can get behind, and that people and dollars and everything can be organized, it is about time that we get a Democratic governor in Texas. And it's also not just the governor. I think it's really important to pay attention to the state legislator. A lot of Democrats enabled what the Republicans were able to do. And I think it's really important to make sure that there's not a supermajority in that state anymore.
Mm. Absolutely. And I mean, and Texas Republicans are very open about just running roughshod over their Democratic counterparts, even when they're skipping town and trying to prevent, you know, the rollback of voting rights in that state.
That's right.
Which always boggles my mind. You have record turnout and Republicans look at that and are like, nope, I don't like it. Like that. It's so obvious that they only care about minority rule, and that's the only way that they think that they can win. Look, here's what I'll say about Beto. I don't like, you know, the sort of Vanity Fair covers, and I was making fun of that, and like, you know, the kind of like I'm a young JFK or JFK, like that he that, you know, he's sort of trying to be like the good-looking, like, you know, young Democrat or the Barack Obama, etc. But I will say that on the issue of immigration and on the border, especially as you mentioned, if it does get taken out of the budget reconciliation plan, as it may be, because the parliamentarian has ruled that apparently you can't have a pathway to citizenship in the budget. Beto is one of the few politicians I've heard be able to speak very clearly about the nuances of the border, right? The US-Mexico border, the fact that, you know, there are people who have lived and worked in Texas, who have family across the border, who cross every single day. There is not a big divide for them. There are generations of Mexican Americans that like and other Central Americans who call Texas home, that it was once Mexico. And there is a sense that, you know, whereas we're in a time when Lieutenant Governor Patrick, I believe his name is, was basically last week on going on Lauren Ingram's show and saying, you know, that this is an invasion, a foreign invasion of, you know, of like essentially a mob, right? Or like a horde or whatever. That having a new way to talk about the border, especially from someone who has lived there, who knows it. I think that Julian Castro also has that same understanding, and obviously his brother Joaquin, because they've obviously are from Texas as well. We need that. We need that leadership, because Democrats are blind when it comes to understanding how to craft a new narrative, a human narrative and a humane narrative about the future of the border and immigration policy.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. You have to give it to the leadership of the Castro brothers, Joaquin and Julian and Beto on this issue. They're also people who represent border, like Beto represented El Paso, right? Julian was the mayor of San Antonio, and Joaquin represents a district that is right there, right? They actually know it. They're not just talking about this place that's not even near them. They're not in Houston, just hunkering down. They're actually, they live and breathe this. And the history also of Rosie Castro, Joaquin and Julian's mom, who did a lot of farm worker organizing and migrant worker organizing. I think it's just totally critical to have these voices who are both talking about the humanity of all of this, but also the reality and saying, no, it is not this like invasion. There aren't these caravans with thousands of vans in it that are coming to us that are going to, you know, that are going to wreak violence in our communities. And so I do actually appreciate that. So if any of the three of them wanted to run, I'm here for it. And yes, I, you know, it's not my favorite that Beto has to be Beto, like your name's Robert. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think that it's time for some real leadership change in Texas. And I'm going to follow the organizers on the ground to hell or high water around what they're going to do with their future.
Totally. And you know, does he have a chance? How is Governor Abbott doing? How is he polling? Let's look at this poll. So in a new Dallas Morning Texas poll, or a Dallas Morning News poll, I said all those things right. 54% of the respondents say they believe Texas is headed in the wrong direction. And this was before the pandemic. Abbott's approval rating was at 59%. If this is before the pandemic, I can only imagine what it is now. The poll also revealed that Matthew McConaughey would beat Abbott in a head-to-head matchup, 44% to 35%. So he might have a challenger. I don't know. Would Matthew McConaughey, is he running as a Republican? Just don't run, buddy. Just don't. Just stop. Stop trying. You're just such a tryhard.
Yes, play the bongos.
Stick to acting and bongos. And there's gonna be a reboot of, you know, whatever that movie was that I've put in the back of my mind. You know what I'm saying?
He should be like a face of the campaign, and right, like,
yes,
support whoever you want to get behind against Abbott. But you know, leave it to the real ones out here.
Yes. Okay, so this is from Axios recently. A new poll for the Dallas Morning News shows that O'Rourke has narrowed the gap with Abbott in a hypothetical matchup, down 37% to 42%. In July, O'Rourke faced a 12-point deficit, 33% to 45%. So he's creeping up on Abbott. And like, I mean, say what you will, there's few people who can really, like, how many Texans are on board with Abbott? From everything, you know, from the response to, you know, the deep freeze, you know, and not actually addressing sort of the electrical grid properly, to, you know, like coming down against mask mandates, trying to keep people safe, to this like draconian abortion law. Like, I know there are a lot of like fervent right wingers, but is that the majority? We know that Texas, no matter what, like, even though a lot of people have moved there from California, it's still a purple state, right? It's becoming more purple by the minute. So look, I think that I totally agree that the last thing I'll say is Beyonce in 2018 took a long time to endorse Beto O'Rourke. Like, and the day before the election, she tweets something with like, Beto, girl, you could command way more votes than that. Get out the vote, Beyonce. Get out the vote, Matthew McConaughey. Stop trying to run for office. All right, we got to go to the next story. Let's move on.
Look, you are right. This is the Bernie Sanders budget. Bernie Sanders is a wide-eyed and admitted socialist. He says this is the most transformational bill in a generation. He means it. It is trillions in spending. It is trillions in new taxes. It is the Green New Deal. Everyone who pays taxes in America will see their taxes go up under this massive proposal. Individual taxes are going up. Corporate taxes are going up. Whether it passes or not will depend on 50 Democrats in the Senate. Do they get Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to go along? I can tell you Chuck Schumer is putting a world of hurt and pressure on the two of them. I hope they stand their ground, that they have demonstrated some real courage so far, standing up to the crazies in their party. But you put your finger on what the White House is trying to do.
So that is Senator Ted Cruz of Texas praising conservative Democrats like Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia for holding out against this $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation or Build Back Better plan that would be utterly transformative to the lives of most Americans. He goes on to talk about how, it's so socialist, it's raising taxes. Yeah, it's raising taxes on the rich. It's raising taxes on corporations. But you know, let's actually talk about it. We're talking about universal preschool, free community college, lowering the age of Medicare, lowering the price of prescription drugs, creating a climate core, billions of dollars for climate resilience and planning in the face of deep freezes like what Texas went through. But here he is. He's his hat is off, and he has reason to praise Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, because arguably they're on the same side at this point. Just this weekend, Manchin told a group of employees at Procter & Gamble facility at Martinsburg, again, pharmaceutical facility, yes, they were workers, but that he wanted to pause all talk of the $3.5 trillion bill until 2022. Mm-hmm. So he is actively discussing and openly lauding the fact that he is stalling this process. Senator Kyrsten Sinema has a lot of reservations apparently about prescription drug prices. She wants to make sure they don't go down. She, of course, in 2020 received $100,000 from Big Pharma. Nalini, I just wanted your thoughts on this holdup from these Democrats and the fact that someone like Ted Cruz is praising them.
Yeah, it's It's a shame. And actually, if you look back at Kristen Sinema's campaign footage, she said that she wanted to lower the price of prescription drugs. So it's also just completely the opposite of what voters voted for when they voted her in the state of Arizona. And I just think that what we have here is a crisis. We're facing a crisis just like we did after the 2008 financial crash. No banker went to jail. Nobody got held accountable for that. And right now, what we need is this package in its full to be passed. And we need to make sure that Sinema and Manchin are held accountable every step of this way.
Absolutely. Nalini Stamp of Working Families Party, thank you so much. We have more on the other side on YouTube, but we're ending for linear. Stay with us. And yeah, we'll see you very soon. Later.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.